may I have a motion to approve the minutes of the regular business meeting of February 10, 2020, and work study meeting of February 24, 2020? May? Second, Easter. All in favor? Okay, may I have a motion to approve the treasurer's and business office financial reports and extracurricular fund from the report for January 2020? Donaldson, and this is seconded by Mrs. Cosi. Any discussion? All in favor? Passes unanimously. Okay, moving on to the superintendent's report.
Okay, welcome everybody. Good to see you here tonight. I'm going to put some rumors to rest. I heard this story today that there was a big board meeting tonight about the coronavirus. So that is not the case, but I will give you an update. We've sent home a number of letters to our community. We sent the second letter last Friday to everybody in our school community, and this is pretty much, you know, changing as we go along. But today we had a really, really terrific webinar with all of the superintendents in Suffolk County. Most of them were online with the Suffolk County Health Department and our association, and it answered a lot of our questions. The bottom line is, everybody's wondering, you know, are we closing schools? Are we going to be closing schools for lengthy periods of time? And from what I gathered in talking with the health department is basically saying, listen, the only time we will direct schools to close is if you have a confirmed case in your district. That means a student or a parent or someone in close contact that the health department has determined the reason to notify the school district to close. All right? So, you know, as superintendents, we were asking, well, what if, you know, somebody comes to us and they say, I know somebody who was, you know, who's in my house, who is close to somebody, who knows somebody. The bottom line is we have a portal, and if we get word of any suspicion that someone close in our school district could have been, you know, near, that's not even cause to close a school system. The governor just came down today saying that, you know, if there is a confirmed case, that the health department would notify school districts to close for the next 24 hours, and then after that, take it on a day-by-day basis. So you will be hearing, you know, certain districts out there, they might be closing. You know, one just closed this afternoon because a staff member in Nassau County had a confirmed case of COVID-19. They're closing only for a day, which is probably the protocols that we're going to see. But that is the strict reason why schools would close, okay? We are getting some questions from parents. Can I keep my child home? You can surely keep your child home if you wanted to. That's a parent's decision. But keep in mind, those right now are unexcused absences. You know, we're taking it just like every other district, day by day. We are continuing with meticulous cleaning in our buildings each and every night, disinfection, procedures. So I think we're in really good shape, and we just continue each night, you know, and each day to follow protocols. So there's a lot of, you know, rumors out there. There's a lot of misconceptions, and I hope that you feel that we've been giving a lot of information as we get it. We put those up on our website, and we hope that you, you know, take that. And our PTA has been terrific, you know, by promoting that. And the minute we hear something, we would let everybody know. But I will tell you, you know, our conversation with the health department today was very positive, and they really seem to have a very, very good, strict protocol in place for identifying school districts. If someone was ever confirmed within our school district, a confirmed case, we would get notified directly by the health department, okay? So I just wanted to say that, and we learn as we go along with this. Okay? With that, we'd like to call up our student delegates who are here with us tonight. Welcome.
We are currently organizing a field day event for all senior high students. The date is still being determined.
For the Fine Arts Department, for the visual art, last month, Full Sail University visited the media arts class. Other interested art students attended the presentation as well. The students were able to participate in a hands-on 3D character design activity to learn about careers in the field. March is Youth Art Month. Art students will be creating a collaborative tape drawing in the center hall of the high school during their art classes next week. They will also be spending a week participating in a post-it art challenge, and the results will be hanging in the senior high cafeteria. Art Honor Society members will be participating in Decorate to Donate activities this month. Members of the Art Honor Society will be volunteering their time to face paint at the Lions Club Pancake Breakfast on Sunday, March 29th at the grade school. Three art students are attending the Love of Art Weekend classes at Adelphi from now until May. Winners of the Great Guide Palooza contest are Jenna Tiger, Andy Quinn, Jack Layton, and Allie Van Ronson. All participants are being treated to a breakfast by the Great Guide Board. Some of our art students participated in the Doodle for Google contest. We will find out the results next month.
From DECA, there were 3,200 students competing at the New York State DECA Career Competition last week. Babylon was one of 10 schools to receive a community service award for donating to the state charity, the National Suicide Prevention Hotline. In addition, 8 students were inducted into the New York State DECA Honor Society. Aaron Corcoran, Jill Camilleri, Kate Hannon, Megan Nockerman, Maddie Redd, Ali Van Rossum, Darby Dreher, and Megan Burke. The DECA Honor Society recognizes students who are actively enrolled in business classes and participate in multiple DECA activities. The following students received top 10 awards at the 60th New York State DECA Career Competition. Noah Kowalewski had 2 top 10 awards, Julie Hagan, Megan Burke had 4 top 10 awards, Aaron Corcoran had 4 top 10 awards, Megan Nockerman, Bridget Hannon, Darby Dreher, Ali Van Rossum had 10 top 10, 4 top 10 awards, and Kate Hannon had 4 top 10 awards. Very proud of our students' performances. Was a great trip.
And our drama club. Babylon's theater department took 10 students up to the NYCEA conference at the Villa Roma Resort the weekend of January 10th. Each year, the resort fully closes down to the public and invites all New York State theater students grades 10 through 12 for a weekend filled with educational theater. The students can choose from over 150 classes ranging from directing, set design, improv, comedy, makeup, artistry, writing, sound design, light design, dance, vocal coaching, and so much more. All taught by industry professionals, much of whom have direct Broadway experiences. It was a great weekend, and the department looks forward to next year's trip. Thank you.
Great job. Thanks, everybody. Okay, some updates around the district. Babylon Highlights is the latest edition of our newsletter. It hopefully has hit resident mailboxes, and a copy has been also published to the district website. This past Friday, we had a very excellent turnout for our 5th annual legislative breakfast and community summit. We had all of our elected leaders here. I've attached a PowerPoint presentation to the website if you want to take a look at that as we advocate for proper school funding. I want to thank all of our association members who were also here with us. We have great representation from community civic groups and our PTA, as well as our administrators and teachers associations. Special thank you to Elizabeth O'Brien, our board president, as well as Mrs. Noesi, trustee on our board, who attended on Friday morning. Want to save the date, keep in mind there is a board change. The next board meeting will be March 30th. That's a new date. We've been publicizing that for some time. On to student celebrations. Our kids always do a great job at giving the rundown of student accolades. Last week, we had a week filled with pop concerts, science fairs. Lots starting to happen as we head into the busy spring season. We also have the musical Seussical coming up in April. It was really great on Friday morning at our breakfast. We had the kids perform a piece from that, which was excellent. So that's a great show to come see, and I hope you join us when that is presented. And finally, mock trial news. The high school's mock trial team won their competition on Wednesday, on the fourth and final round, won. They won by an incredibly decisive victory over Comswag High School. They jumped in ranking from 17th in the county to 11th in the county, which is really great because this is a fairly new team that we started here at Babylon. They had a strong performance, and on Wednesday, March 11th at 3 p.m., they will be competing against Northport High School in the Sweet 16 of the county playoffs. And that will take place at the Cahalahan Courthouse Complex in Central Islip. So good luck to that team. That's all I have to say.
Is this their first year competing?
This is that group's first year, right. But you know, we've been building up from the grade school.
Yeah.
So this is now our third team.
Okay, that's it.
About your presentation?
Yeah. Do we have a clicker?
We do.
Perfect.
Would you like to
kick the hands? Sure. So this is our third budget presentation of the budget season. Tonight we're going to be reviewing interscholastic athletics as well as transportation. When we talk about transportation, we're talking about school day transportation, special education transportation, private parochial, summer transportation, and transportation for field trips. Obviously, you know, this is a tight budget season for us. I won't lie to you. We've been working with all of our groups nonstop about how we can come in at a budget that is at the tax levy cap, as well as a budget that is preserving all programs. We have a new tax levy cap formula, which I'm going to let Dr. Daly describe a little bit. Our tax levy has changed due to additional building aid that has come in.
Okay, so without complicating things, this is the ninth year that school districts will be operating under the tax cap legislation. And essentially what that does is it caps the growth in the tax levy from one year to the next. That cap is determined by the CPI, or the change in the consumer price index from one year to the next. So when that change in the consumer price index is low, the amount that we could raise our taxes is subsequently low. This year, with the formula that we have to work with, our tax levy is scheduled to increase 2.82%. That's tied directly to the change in the CPI, which was determined to be 1.81. Now, why does one not match the other? Because there's certain nuances to the formula that allow certain expenses to be excluded from the calculation. The most common exclusion is capital construction debt. Those of you that have been around long enough, or not even that long, know that we recently had a $26.6 million bond referendum. Well, now we have to make the payments on that, the principal and interest. Those payments are excluded from the cap calculation, and basically that's why our tax levy is able to increase 2.82 and not 1.81. So basically that's it. You have to remember, 80% of our revenue to balance the scales comes from the tax levy. That's going to increase next year 2.82. That budget that you're going to vote on the third Tuesday in May has to be tax cap compliant, and it will be.
Thank you. Okay, so let's take a look at the code which talks about bond debt. As you know, we had a 2013 bond renewal project, And when you go out and you do a bond, years later, you have to pay principal and interest on those monies borrowed. So we have to budget now in this school budget for next year. We have to budget to pay principal as well as interest. And you see the figures in red up there, what is in our school budget to pay down that debt as we start to pay it down. In addition, we just recently received state aid funding in the initial late January run from the governor's office. At this point in the school year, we're looking at a $372,382 increase in overall state aid compared to the 1920 school aid runs. That will probably go up by how much? We're not so sure. We now await the passage of the state budget on or before April 1st to see if there will be more money coming our way regarding state aid. We are not state aid dependent as a school district, which could be a good thing and a bad thing. You know, our state aid is about maybe 16-17% of our total budget. But every little bit helps coming from the state. I'm going to turn the next number of slides over to Dr. Daly to talk about the interscholastic athletic components.
Okay. Tonight we're talking about athletics and transportation, which are overall a very small part of the total budget. But the first part is the athletic component. We have numbers up there or codes. We have budgets in the back, but basically these are the specific athletic codes. This is for 2855. The code 2855 covers the support staff, athletic administrative salaries, as well as coaching salaries, Section 11, which is the governing body, fees, official fees, and athletic supervision. In 1920, we budgeted $943,825. Next year, included in the first draft of the budget, is $942,634. It's a slight decrease, but in no way is that a decrease in the programs we're offering. Next slide.
Yep.
So there's additional codes within athletics. These are specific team codes. There is no increase. These are for specific team uniforms and supplies. Overall, it's not a great deal of money. But these are for example, the footballs, the tennis balls. If we're replacing uniforms, we do that every so many years for each sports team. Typically, when we buy new uniforms on the varsity level, the old varsity uniforms go down to the JV. The JV uniforms go down to the junior high, et cetera, et cetera. So that's a flat amount. We're not anticipating any increase. Next slide. Transportation. Our transportation, let's call it administrative costs, just increasing slightly. The one thing I'll mention about transportation, we have contracts. We contract with outside vendors. Typically, those contracts provide an increase in the amount of the consumer price index. So any increases you see in transportation, they're all related to the change, anticipated change in the CPI for next year. So 78,000, 80,000 draft budget. This is really the meat and potatoes of transportation. In these codes, we include the cost for the in-district transportation. We also include the cost for private and parochial special education. That's a significant part of the transportation, or the lion's share of the transportation budget. Again, that increase of $60,000 is attributable to the contract costs, increase in contract costs. No increase in transportation services.
I just want to add something with this slide. This is an area you have to look at that really doesn't affect programs for kids. If we're going down little by little in enrollment, every few years you have to take a look at your runs. Are we being as efficient as possible regarding, you know, school busing? Are those buses being utilized? So we're in the process of looking, you know, at our fleet of buses, looking at current ridership, and this is an area that, you know, we do carefully look at. In addition to the number of runs we even use, you know, for our private parochial schools, we've been finding that in the last 5 years, there's definitely small consolidations that we've been finding. like I said, we have to look at that. Okay.
I'll take it.
Moving forward, April 1st is the adoption deadline for the state budget to be approved up in Albany. Our timeline is to adopt this budget by April 6th, that meeting of April 6th. I think we will meet that timeline. And the next budget meeting is scheduled for March 30th. That's a new date, not March 23rd, as originally in the, you know, the district calendar. It is March 30th. This slide gives you a rundown of the future budget workshop dates, times, and topics. Our next date will be March 30th, in which we'll be discussing instruction, special education, and technology. And just to bring your attention, May 19th is the annual budget vote from 6 a.m. to 9 p.m. here again in the Babylon Junior Senior High School East Gymnasium. Okay? Any questions from the Board of Education? Okay. Thank you. Okay, moving on to committee reports. Mrs. Donaldson, you have committee?
Hi, thank you. Yes, we met briefly on February 24th to speak with the auditors about fund balance, and then we pushed that information out in our work study to get you all.
Finance
met this evening, going through some tough decisions right now, and there's lots of numbers that have to still be worked through, and I'm feeling rather working very diligently on that, and our next meeting will be April 6th.
Okay. Buildings and grounds, do we have anything?
No, but after this meeting concludes, we are going to speak with our new architect for about 10 minutes. For anyone who wants to stay around to give an update on the capital improvement vote that happened last May and where we are with that.
This is the Resi Technology.
Okay, the IT department is continuing to work on becoming compliant with newly adopted state regulations related to data privacy that involve some new policies. We're waiting for templates from the state about that. We are also continuing to work on finalizing formal plans related to IT needs and infrastructure and coordination with OCs in regards to our disaster recovery plan. So, more information.
Okay. For the curriculum committee, we met, I think it was February 24th, and we reviewed the ESSA report. We started looking into that. And policy.
Yes, good evening. Tonight we will be conducting a second reading and the adoption on a policy that we discussed in committee, and that is policy 8130, that establishes a new civil procedure that allows a concerned family member, school official, or member of law enforcement to obtain a court order, known as an extreme risk protection order, to remove and keep guns away from individuals who pose a serious risk of harm to themselves or others. In a school district's case, that would be a current or a former student we received information on that could cause some heightened concern. And this new law came into effect August 24th of 2019. And our next policy meeting will be on Tuesday, April 7th at 4 o'clock p.m.
Okay, great. All right, moving on to new business. May I have a motion to omnibus items 1 through 22? Mrs. Durs and Mrs. Donaldson. Mrs. Donaldson, any discussion? Okay, all in favor? Passes unanimously.
Okay. Thank you, board, for you finished the pass, right?
No, yes. We still have
to. Sorry.
Yeah, I'm sorry. All right, and now may I have a motion to approve items 1 through 22? This is Kinney, and this is Donaldson. Seconded by any discussion? All right, all in favor? Passes unanimously.
At this time, I would like to recognize three wonderful people by resolution tonight who are being recognized for their time of service to the Babylon School District. They've put in their resignation for purposes of retirement as of July 1, 2020. Please give a round of applause. I don't know if they're here tonight because I can't see. But please give a round of applause to Barbara Krutcher. She's the epitome of the best kindergarten teacher I think I've ever seen in my years of doing this. She just loves kindergarten. And I often say it's the hardest job in the whole district sometimes, teaching kindergarten. So congratulations to her. Special recognition and round of applause for Mrs. Robin LaBarbera, who's a reading specialist retiring from School. She does wonderful work. And also the wonderful Mrs. Pratt, fourth grade teacher at Babylon Memorial Grade School. Give her a round of applause for you. And I'd also like to recognize Miss Tara O'Rourke, who is here with her family tonight. She is now hired as a part-time clerical aid assistant. Welcome to the Babylon. We're so happy to have you, Miss O'Rourke, on our staff, and thank you for being here with her tonight too. Okay.
Okay, is there any other business? Okay, moving forward, representatives of organizations, please approach the podium and state your name. Okay, any questions or comments from visitors, please approach the podium and state your name.
Good evening, Robert Strom. In the past, I have asked, like item number 15, item number 16, and item number 17. They were, 17, 18, and 19. There were costs associated with that. I asked if those costs could be put for the public information.
Yoga? The yoga education program is going to be roughly approximately $12,000. The clinical staffing agreement with Horizon Healthcare Staffing, that's billed as needed, correct, Ms. Consolo? Mm-hmm. So there is no cost unless we use that outfit?
Is there an hourly fee with that?
It varies depending on what service you're using.
And Dr. Daly, do you want to address number 19, the architectural agreement?
You don't have to give it right now, but in the future. I have asked this in the past. I like to know this stuff. I don't know about the rest of the crowd, but I like to know this stuff. And I've asked in the past, and I don't think it's unreasonable.
Thank you.
The other question I had, did they fix the boiler that was supposed to be repaired at the school?
Two sections were replaced over the February.
And on a personal note, we lost members of this community, Mr. Norm Arapach and Mr. Joe DeLuca, wonderful people, and a great tribute to this and a credit to this community.
Yes, you're good.
Okay. My name is Jennifer Parendo, and I am a parent of three children in our district. I have a fifth grader, third grader, and a kindergartner. Some of you are familiar with the dyslexia legislation that I've been advocating for and lobbying in Albany. However, tonight, I am here on behalf of my youngest son, Michael, a typical learner, non-dyslexic student, who recently asked me while reading aloud one afternoon, "Mom, should I look at the pictures or the words when I read?" To most, this innocent question seems status quo, and a simple response would suffice. I think most would reply, "Well, good readers use both words and pictures to read books." However, Michael's confusion raised a lot of red flags. I hope to share with you my concerns and the flaws of our current balanced literacy English language arts curriculum here in Babylon. My goal is to share why evidence-based, scientifically proven, structured literacy is the better choice for reading acquisition. My mission is to collaborate with our district leaders, teachers, and parents to adjust our ELA curriculum and improve the outcomes of our current RTI model. To my understanding, Babylon employs a balanced literacy approach, implementing foundations at the elementary school, the K-2, and Teachers College, the Reading Writing Project at Tier 1, in all our K-6 Gen Ed classrooms. Teachers utilize Fountas and Pinnell's Leveled Literacy Intervention, otherwise known as LLI, for leveled literacy and assessments, as well as iReady, a comprehensive assessment and instruction program that pinpoints student ability level. If a student qualifies for Academic Intervention Services, AIS, which are services designed to help students achieve the learning standards in ELA, K-12, Social Studies and Science in grades 4-12, AIS reading support at the Tier 2 of the RTI model would include students receiving reading recovery, Wilson, or multisensory instruction, typically delivered in small groups. If I'm delivering any incorrect information, please let me know. AIS is a mandated program designed to help students meet state standards, and any student who is at risk of not meeting standards is typically enrolled in an AIS course to receive additional instruction and assistance related to the specific subject area. Continuous progress monitoring is needed to assess student outcomes and growth, and AIS is not intended to house students beyond the 9-to-33-week period of remediation. A shocking number of students across the United States are not proficient readers. A third of all fourth graders can't read at a basic level, and most students are not proficient readers by the time they finish high school. From my understanding, we here in Babylon have seen an increase in Tier 2 AIS building support and Tier 3 instruction. More children have been identified and need reading support services. I share this with you because reading instruction in most New York State schools has been rooted in a flawed theory about how reading works. This theory was debunked decades ago by cognitive scientists, yet remains deeply embedded in teaching practices and curriculum materials across our state and of which our district employs. As a result, the strategies that struggling readers use to get by, memorizing words, using context to guess words, skipping words they don't know, are the strategies that many beginning readers are taught in school, including our classrooms. Districts, including ours, may believe that a balanced literacy approach will provide our children with a solid foundation for literacy skills. However, when schools combine a structured phonics program like foundations with balanced literacy approaches, as our gen ed classrooms do, teachers are often causing confusion and reduce a child's opportunity to solidify what they have learned. Hence, my five-year-old son asking if he should be looking at the words or the pictures when figuring out an unknown word. This conflicting approach makes it harder for many kids to learn how to read. And we know that children who don't get off to a good start in reading find it difficult to ever master the process. Our students are being exposed to a faulty curriculum that follows a cueing theory of how reading works. The premise of cueing, just to give you a little background, proposes that when a child comes to a word she doesn't know, the teacher encourages her to think of a word that makes sense and asks, does it look right? Does it sound right? If a word checks out based on those questions, the child is considered to be making progress in the classroom. She's on the path to becoming a skilled reader. Yet, in my opinion, this is far from the truth. In kindergarten and first grade, our students are exposed to predictable books. The sentences are all the same except for the last word. I've been seeing a lot of these coming home in my son's backpack. In one particular lesson from Units of Study for Teaching Reading, more commonly known as Reader's Workshop, students are taught to know and apply grade-level phonics and word analysis skills in decoding words. But the children were not taught to decode words in this lesson at all. They were taught to guess words using pictures and patterns, characteristics of the three cueing system. Look at the garden, look at the caterpillar, look at the butterfly were examples. The children have been taught to memorize the words look, at, and the, also known as sight words or snap words. The challenge is getting the last word in the sentence. The lesson plan tells the teacher to cover up the word with a sticky note. My son Michael came home that afternoon, not sure if it was followed by this particular lesson in school, but he excitedly reported that he can read so well, he doesn't even have to look at the words on the pages. Yes, my kindergartner had memorized the complete book, cover to cover, and read it with his eyes shut. Again, this is not reading. Aside from Teachers College Reading Writing Project, Babylon also implements Fountain Canal LLI instruction. It's intended to be intensive, small group, supplementary literacy intervention for students who find reading and writing difficult. They have several books about teaching reading, including a widely used instructional approach called guided reading. They also created a reading assessment system that uses what they call leveled readers or leveled books. Children start with predictable books, as the example that I gave in the garden, and then they move up levels as they're able to read the words. But many of the words in those books, such as butterfly or caterpillar, if that were in one of the leveled readers, their beginning readers haven't been taught to decode those words. So again, they're relying on that three cueing system and guessing their way through text. One purpose of the books is to teach children that when they get to a word they don't know, they can use context to figure it out. Yet, I have noticed that as my own children progress through the grades and the volume of the text becomes greater, the vocabulary more complex, and there are less pictures for support, kids can no longer successfully rely on the cueing strategies and context to support them through these leveled readers. They start to fall flat on their face. So I'm curious if our iReady scores and data show this decline. Is there an influx of students being recommended for AIS services between second and fourth grade when these LLI readers come into play? I pose these questions, but regardless of the data, because whatever these numbers may be, they can be significantly decreased with implementing a scientifically supported, research-based, explicit structured literacy curriculum. So where do we go from here? We look to the science. We stop telling our children to guess. To prevent reading failure, educators must understand and act on scientific evidence. Reading instruction must be grounded in the converging scientific evidence about how reading develops, how many students have difficulties, and how we can prevent reading failure. Teachers must have access to this information and implement research-based reading instruction in their classrooms. I'm going to skip ahead because I know I have quite a bit here, but I did want to share with you a recent report that was just released in January of 2020, 2 months ago, called Comparing Reading Research to Program Design, and it was conducted by the Student Achievement Partners. I have the report with me, but it examines our TC curriculum. It was noted that explicit instruction of foundational reading skills is critical in early elementary school. Foundational skills instruction includes print concepts, phonological awareness, phonics, and word recognition and fluency. Numerous studies point to the benefits of a systematic foundational skills program for reading success. One of the doctors involved in the study, Dr. Page, who closely reviewed the lessons from Teachers College, the units of study, for their phonics content, noted major failings. And we know that phonics is how children learn to decode, read, and learn to read. Number one, and this is verbatim from the study, there is not enough time given to acquiring the phonics skills, which is particularly dire for students who might not immediately master those patterns or read fluently. Number two, the program frequently recommends use of SMV, which is structure, meaning, visual system, which is the three cueing system I referred to, which is in direct opposition to an enormous body of settled research, including the foundations that we also implement with our children. They're conflicting. And number three, insufficient guidance is provided regarding how to use the results of assessments to inform instruction. This means any student who does not immediately master an aspect of foundational reading is at risk of never getting it. So members of the Board of Education, I ask the following. How much money is allocated to Teachers College, the Reading Writing Project curriculum, and professional development? How much is allocated for leveled LLI? And that's with Fountain Simpson now. How many students, and I don't know if this is confidential information, but how many students receive AIS building support? I would love to know the breakdown at grade level, which is tier two interventions. And are we utilizing other areas of the iReady learning program? All students are typically on the computer 3 times a year for the iReady assessments. There's other components of the iReady software. I don't know if that's something but it does align. I'm sorry. I know you were trying to, but it does align, and there are additional programs that can be implemented in the classroom. And another question that I just found in kind of conducting research and getting this together for you tonight was, there's a district description of academic intervention services, and that's supposed to occur every 2 years. I was just curious when that last academic intervention was delivered, was established. It doesn't, the New York State Department does not require that you hand it in, but it is a partnership with community members, with teachers, parents, advocates, and board members to come together and kind of create a think tank about curriculum. And that's supposed to be every 2 years based on student outcomes and testing results. So I just want to leave off with, I'm happy to share any of my reports, my data, my research. I will share anything and everything with you that I have found. I urge our administration, the Babylon School District Board of Education, during this budget season, to reconsider our current literacy or balanced literacy ELA curriculum and adopt a scientifically proven, evidence-based, structured literacy approach so all children can learn how to read in our classrooms. I've implemented this exact curriculum that Babylon has in my own classrooms, and I wish I knew then what I know now, because when you know better, you do better. So thank you so much for your time and attention to this. I would be happy to share this with you.
Sure, we'll take it up here. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much.
March 30th, changed from March 23rd, and our next regular business meeting.